This is Lucy and Susan Letcher, otherwise known as Isis and Jackrabbit, reading from their Appalachian Trail memoir, The Barefoot Sisters, Southbound. In this podcast, Jackrabbit reads about hiking through Pennsylvania in late fall, where sharp rocks, cold weather, and a mistake with their food supplies set the sisters' tempers on edge.
I lost track of the days we spent in the mountains of Pennsylvania. It was hard to tell where we were from the maps. Aside from gaps where the trail dropped down 1,000 feet or so to cross a river, we followed the flat, featureless tops of ridges just wide enough for a few trees and the occasional clump of brambles. To either side, the valley floor showed between leafless branches. In places, freeways uncoiled at the base of the ridge, cars glinting as they rounded the cloverleaf turns, so distant the sound of their passage hardly reached us. Sometimes we saw red barns and silos standing guard over still green fields and the occasional herd of cows dotting a pasture. After the family from the north got ahead of us, we saw hardly anyone in the woods. Sometimes a family of day hikers or a scout troop passed us, but days would go by without human contact. The incessant wind, sighing in the bare trees and rustling the heaps of fallen leaves, was our only companion when we stealth camped in tiny clearings beside the trail. Each morning dawned later and colder. Frost often glittered from the trail as we packed up our camp. The rocks continued, sharp, uneven, treacherous stacks that shifted and clattered underfoot, often hidden under drifts of leaves. One day, we came down into the tiny town of Port Clinton, a few houses and two bars sandwiched between the Schuylkill River, a railroad yard, and a four-lane highway. The town was too small to even have a grocery store. The sound of traffic on the freeway reverberated everywhere in the streets. Willows along the riverbank still bore a few yellow leaves, but the grass on the fields in town was nearly all dry and dead. Isis picked up our mail drop while I sat with our packs on the porch of the post office. The lobby of the small building was too cramped to fit both of us and our gear. A shadow fell across the postcard I was writing, and I looked up to see a frail-looking woman in her 70s, wearing a blue house dress and orthopedic shoes. "Are you hiking the trail?" she asked.
"Yep. It runs along those ridges, doesn't it?"
She pointed one gnarled finger toward the mountain across the river. The sun was low already, and the highest branches of the bare trees were gilded with its horizontal rays. "Yeah, we came down right there." I pointed out the trailhead across the railroad yard and showed her where the AT switched back down the steep end of the ridge. She looked off into the trees, wistful.
"You know, I've lived here all my life. I was here before the highway went in. I've never been up on those ridges, and now I don't think I ever will. Good luck to you, young one."
"Thank you," I said gravely. She crossed the street and turned between two rows of houses, disappearing from view. I looked back up at the sunlit ridges, and I wanted more than anything to be back there among the trees. I felt trapped, suffocated here among the high houses, the bars, the cracked asphalt, and omnipresent traffic sounds. Isis came out of the post office with our box of food. It didn't take long to pack it into Ziplocs and divide it between our food bags. We had only sent ourselves 3 days' worth of meals. "Where's our next town stop?" I asked. Isis took out the map. "Duncannon," she said. I leaned over her shoulder, looking at the elevation profile along the top of the map. "How far?" She frowned. "It should be right here. I know it's right here at the end of this map. 30 miles. 3 days. "It's not here, though," I said. "Swatara Gap is not Duncannon. Are we missing a map? Wait a second." As the sunlight came through the open map, it illuminated something on the back of the paper. I felt a sinking sensation in my chest. All of the other Pennsylvania maps had been one-sided. It couldn't be, but there it was, the missing section, 35 miles of flat ridgeline, 35 miles for which we had no food. It took a while to realize the full extent of the mess we'd gotten into. "There has to be some place to buy food around here," Isis said. The only business open in town, besides the two bars, was a candy store.
We spent the last of our cash, they didn't take credit cards, on fudge and chocolate-covered mints, the most caloric-looking things we could find. $13 didn't go very far. Isis asked if there was an ATM in town, but the woman at the counter shook her head with a tight-lipped smile. "We'll think of it as an adventure," Isis said as we headed up the ridge. "We can pretend we're on a quest or something." Over the next few days, she was mostly silent and stoic, bearing her burden. Maybe the quest idea worked for her. As for me, I soon discovered that I would rather hike injured than hike hungry. I became short-tempered and hostile. My powers of concentration failed. I tripped and stumbled constantly. And once, the edge of a rock cut the tender skin in the arch of my right foot. The gnawing emptiness in the pit of my stomach was the only thing that occupied my mind for more than a few minutes. A packet of oatmeal in the morning, a handful of crackers at noon, and a meager serving of pasta or potatoes at night hardly touched the surface of my hunger. On the way out of a gap, somewhere between Port Clinton and Duncannon, we got lost. The AT ran along a smooth, grassy track with forests on one side and an old field on the other. A hint of midday warmth lingered in the dry grasses where a few crickets scraped their monotonous, rusty song. "I haven't seen a blaze in ages," Isis said. She took out the map and frowned at it. "I think it turns into the woods soon. Wait, are those blazes up there?" A narrow trail turned off the main track and headed up into the maple and hemlock forest. The trunk of a tall sugar maple bore a few indistinct white marks, just about the right size for AT blazes. We followed the trail for perhaps half an hour. It started out as a narrow but worn track marked with faded blazes. As we proceeded deeper into the woods, it became indistinct, scarcely more than a game trail. The white blazes faded out, and the traces of the trail took a sharp turn uphill. Still, we followed it. The sun had sunk below the next ridge, and the chill seemed to rise out of the lifeless ground. At last, we came to a small stream. There was no sign of a trail on the far bank. It was more than I could take. "What are we doing here? We're hungry, we're cold, we're lost. Fuck this whole damn trail." I sat down by the stream bank, sobbing, pounding my fists into the ground. Dimly at the back of my mind, I was aware that this was not helping our situation. "You girls okay?" It was a gruff male voice. "Shit," I thought. "Just what I need, somebody to watch me hit bottom." I looked up to see a hunter in full camo gear and a blaze orange vest carrying a large gun. "We're fine," Isis assured him. "Do you know if this is the Appalachian Trail?"
"Appalachian Trail," he considered for a moment. "Runs along the next ridge over. Don't know how you ended up here."
"Thanks," Isis said, and the hunter melted back into the woods. I collected myself gradually, still cursing. Back where the trail had turned into the woods, we examined the blazes closely. The paint was chipped and faded, barely more than a stain on the gray bark. "Look at this, Isis," I said. "It looks like these blazes used to be painted over with a darker color." Sure enough, a few flecks of grayish paint still covered the white in places. Isis swore, "This must have been an old relo." We'd seen a few other places where the trail had been relocated, but generally the right direction was much more clearly marked. We stayed on the flat, grassy trail beside the field, hoping that this path at least would lead us in the right direction. My stomach rumbled loudly, my limbs felt weak, and my temper was ready to snap at the slightest provocation. We didn't find another blaze for almost half a mile. One consolation on these cold, hungry days was our pot of tea at night. For a few minutes after my half liter of hot water, I would feel full and content. We always had enough water, often more than enough. We weren't going to make that mistake again. Isis carried a few flavors of herbal tea, peppermint, blackberry, chamomile, red zinger. After supper, when the wind rustled the dry leaves along the ridgetops and the lights in the valleys began to emerge from the gloom, I collected another handful of twigs for the zip stove. Huddled in our fleece jackets and long underwear, we tried to find a place out of the wind to sit and drink our tea. One night, Isis laughed to herself as she added tea bags to the pot.
"What?" I said, slightly annoyed. Everything bothered me, the cold, the endless wind, my grumbling belly. What bothered me the most at that moment, though, was seeing Isis happy. It made me feel inferior, diminished. If I were a better person, I'd be laughing too, but instead I'm moping, I thought. Oh, I was just thinking about a chapter in Lord of the Rings when Sam and Frodo are heading into Mordor, and Sam thinks to himself, it was the hour of the day when civilized people would be having tea. Civilized people would have eaten more than half a cup of instant potatoes. Well, yes, but think of it this way. At least we don't have malevolent supernatural forces on our tails. The consequences of our own stupid mistakes are bad enough. Isis sighed. Do you have to be so negative? I can't help it. I'm fucking hungry. Please don't use that language with me. You sound just like our mother. I'll take that as a compliment. She leveled her stare at me for a moment, then brightened as though remembering a secret. You know what, though? The 501 shelter is coming up. Huh. What's so great about a shelter? Anonymous Badger told me about it at the gathering. It's a huge shelter, all enclosed like a barn, right by the road. There's a caretaker who lets you use his phone. You could call for pizza and get it delivered. Pizza, I sighed. If we are where I think we are, we should get there tomorrow. The next day, the trail underfoot was littered with tiny, sharp rocks. The frost, which now lingered well into the morning, made them seem twice as painful. My belly growled insistently, as it had since we left Port Clinton, but now I cheered myself with thoughts of pizza. Mozzarella, juicy tomato sauce, substantial crust, onions, broccoli, olives, mushrooms. I held the image in my head and ignored the gnawing hunger and the cold. Tonight, I knew, we'd be in a shelter with four walls, out of the wind, eating a full meal at last. It must have been a weekend. We saw more people on the trail that day than we had all week. Two middle-aged men stopped to talk to us while we filtered water from a stream. The one in front did most of the talking, and his companion held back, watching us. You guys through hiking? Yep. Oh, I've always dreamed about it. You ought to do it then, I said. It's a free country. All you've got to do is save up some money, get 6 months off, and walk. He shook his head and sighed ruefully. It's the time off that's the problem. Me and my buddy here, we're high school teachers. I teach English, he does chemistry. We hike as much as we can in the summers, but we can't get more than those 3 months off. You could hike it in sections, I said, a couple hundred miles at a time. We met a lot of people doing that. It's hard to get away from the wife and kids. Maybe when they're older. He caught sight of our feet. Are you hiking barefoot? Barefoot in Pennsylvania? We nodded. Did you come all the way from Maine? Barefoot? We nodded again. And Isis held up one of her splendidly calloused feet for inspection. Well, my hat's off to you. Boy, this'll be part of my campfire stories for years. I'll tell the grandkids about you, when I have grandkids, that is. Finally, his companion spoke up. Would you like a beer? That'd be awesome, thanks. The can felt numbingly cold under my fingers, and wisps of steam rose from the metal. Might be a little cold, the chemistry teacher grinned gleefully. I'm packing them on dry ice. Well, we'll save it for tonight, I guess. Might be thawed out by then. Thanks again. As evening drew on, we finally heard traffic, Pennsylvania 501. We quickened our footsteps, and I licked my lips in anticipation. Real food! The shelter was a converted studio built of dark wood across the lawn from the caretaker's one-story home. We unlatched the door and stepped inside. The final rays of the sun streamed through a hexagonal skylight in the center of the roof. For a shelter with four walls, it was not as cozy as we'd hoped. The ever-present wind worked its way through cracks in the walls and floor, and the persistent chill of a day in the shadows hung in the corners. We looked around, mouse hangers dangling from the ceiling, sturdy wooden bunks, metal trash can, shelves of magazines and ragged old registers, a hiker box picked through to the dregs, a table scattered with candle stubs and the detritus of old feasts, red and white printed menus, napkins, stray spots of pizza grease reflecting the last sunlight like coins from a lost treasure. We laid down our packs, hung the food bags, and set out our sleeping bags on the most sheltered bunks. Isis emptied our trash bag into the metal barrel. With the preliminary chores done, we salivated over the menus. Pizza, subs, salad, all manner of fried appetizers. It didn't take long to choose. We'd get a pizza primavera for tonight, white pizza with broccoli and onions, plus a Greek salad and onion rings, and two eggplant parmigiana subs for tomorrow. It would be the first full meal we'd eaten in 3 days. I rubbed moisturizer on my feet, put my camp shoes on, and went out to look for twigs and water so we could boil a pot of tea with supper. Isis went to the caretaker's house to ask if we could use the phone. I was drawing a pot of water from the spigot on the side of the shelter when she returned, her face set like stone. "They don't take credit cards at the pizza place, and we don't have any cash left," she said in a small voice. I wish I could say I reacted in a sympathetic way, but my temper took over and I let loose a string of expletives instead. The visions of a scrumptious filling dinner vanished as the last slice of orange sun sank below the horizon. The leafless skeletons of oak trees, silhouetted in the purpling sky, seemed to be mocking us as they tossed their arms in the rising wind. "Now what?" I growled between my teeth, but the answer was obvious. I slouched off to gather more twigs for the stove as Isis wordlessly unpacked dinner from my food bag. As a consolation prize, she chose the pasta and not the infernal potatoes. Then I remembered the beer that the weekenders had given us. At least we'd have something to drink with supper. We crouched outside the corner of the shelter to cook, not wanting to risk a spark on the tinder-dry wooden floor. The wind ripped past, stirring the dry leaves on the ground and wicking our body heat away, even through layers of clothing. It took several tries to get the stove going. Eventually, a crumpled-up pizza menu with its cargo of grease did the trick. The meager pot of noodles bubbled and steamed as Isis fed the fire. I sat just upwind, breaking the wood into thumb-sized pieces. Neither of us spoke much, lost as we were in dreams of unattainable pizza. Inside the shelter, Isis scraped the last of our olive oil, now a gelatinous solid, out of its bottle with a debarked twig, and mixed it with the noodles and a half packet of dry pesto. The scent of basil lifted into the cold air. We lit a few candles. In their flickering light, the shelter was transformed. Even though my stomach still growled and the wind whined like a hungry dog around the eaves, everything seemed warmer and softer. As I sat back in the chair, I thought, yes, we are lucky indeed. We divided up the pot of pasta and I opened the beer. Damn it! Half the beer gushed out over the table in a foamy rush, and the other half, mostly water, I guess, sat in the can, still frozen. We drank the little that we could get and savored a few bites of angel hair. I got up from the table after dinner, and my stomach gave a huge, empty rumble. "I can't take this anymore," I shouted. "Why can't we fucking get enough to eat just for once?" Isis sighed and stared at me for a moment. I waited for another comment about my language. And then, as often happens between us, we had the same thought at the same time. We both glanced toward the hiker box, and our eyes met. We smiled. In a moment, we were laying out the contents of the box on the pizza-stained table. There were the ubiquitous bags of unidentified white powders, a Ziploc of instant rice with a suspicious ragged hole in the lower corner, sugar-free Kool-Aid, a very post-dated tube of squeezed parquet, and a nearly empty jar of Jif, a mysterious dehydrated substance resembling jerky. Near the bottom, though, there was more promise. A couple baggies of grains, which we identified tentatively as millet and quinoa, and two instant breakfasts. Isis took her headlamp and fetched a pot of water, and I found more firewood by the dim light of the photon. We huddled outside the door, sheltering the stove from the blasts of wind, but our mood had changed from glum to triumphant. We had faced down adversity together once again. As we do sometimes to cheer each other up, we began exchanging lines of doggerel. It was late one night down at 501, and we were running low on cash. We were glad for four walls around us and a place to put our trash, but we couldn't order pizza. So we were feeling blue, till we had the bright idea of making hiker box stew. We had a name for our concoction, and the list of ingredients grew more and more outlandish as our rhyming went on. In reality, the stew was a sweet pudding with the grains, instant breakfasts, dry milk, sugar, and cinnamon and nutmeg from Isis's stash of spices. We'd managed to salvage a bit of the instant rice from the top of the mouse-chewed bag, checking it carefully for nasties and finding it clean. Isis tried a tentative spoonful. It's like rice pudding, except with not much rice and no raisins and no eggs. It was certainly unusual, but our hunger made it delicious. We made enough to fill our 2-liter pot, and we ate half of it, saving the rest for breakfast. At last, our bellies were full. In the gleam of the many candle stubs, the feeling of satisfaction returned, and this time nothing marred it. We decided to transcribe our silly poem for the register. It was late one night down at 501, and we were running low on cash. We were glad for four walls around us and a place to put our trash, but we couldn't order pizza, so we were feeling blue, till we had the bright idea of making hiker box stew. We added a box of instant rice, perhaps some millet too, and something that might have been quinoa went into our hiker box stew. We added an instant breakfast to make it nice and sweet, and shaved off part of a Snickers bar for an extra special treat. Then we added a handful of peanuts to make it look less like glue, and half a packet of Gatorade and a bunch of Skittles too. So next time you're feeling hungry and you don't know what to do, think of us here at 501 eating our hiker box stew.